Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
Mike Quincy, automotive specialist for Consumer Reports, joins us on WGN. Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking our call. How are you?
Good afternoon, guys. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing well. Just let's start from the buyer's perspective. What are the things that a seller, because I'm the seller. What are the things?
I want to hear more about that old bug, though. I think that's more interesting than anything I've been driving lately.
Doesn't that sound like
I'm
fun?
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no
Let me
kidding.
Tell you, this weekend it was fun.
Yeah, as long as it was working. You know, you say, well, it was fine when I had it, Lois. I don't know why it broke down on you. They always say you're buying somebody else's problems. Give me some tips generally, let's say. What should buyers and sellers be aware of?
Well, I think you kind of hit on it when you started the segment, and that's you really need to know what your car is worth. I mean, if you're going to be selling your car, it's good to have an idea of its value. But this is, I guess, I think this is common knowledge, but it's probably maybe it isn't. But you're always going to get more if you sell the car yourself as opposed to trading it in on a new car. And that's kind of, you know, that's just kind of the way the business works. The dealer is going to give you more of a wholesale price, whereas if you sell yourself, you're going to try to get something closer to the retail price. But you're not going to have anyone interested if your car, you know, looked like it's lived through a war. So one of the first tips you can do when you go to sell your car is clean it up, get it detailed, and make it look super presentable.
What do you think of places like CarMax? You know, I mean, because if the difference is $3,000 versus $3,400, I don't know that that's the difference. But I think some people would say for $400, I'll let them, I'll take the convenience and the check. What do you make of places like that?
No, I can totally see the appeal. In fact, you know, one of the number one questions that I get working here at Consumer Reports is, what do you do with all the test cars when you're done with them? And the short answer is that we sell them to the people working for Consumer Reports, first of all, and if we can't get a buyer within that 400 or 500 pool of people, then we'll either trade it in on another test car. But we have brought a bunch of cars to CarMax, believe it or not, and we've gotten decent pricing for it. So they're a major retailer, you know, nationwide retailer, so they might have more flexibility to look at your car and give you top dollar for it, as opposed to maybe the smaller, like, mom-and-pop shops. So I would definitely give CarMax a try, at least get an assessment of what you think that they will give you.
What do you make of Kelley Blue Book?
Yeah, you know, they're one of many pricing information, just sources for information, whether you go Kelley Blue Book, whether you go Edmunds, there's all kinds of numbers. But it's all going to depend really on where you live. For example, if you live, let's say, in California. I just got back from a trip from California vacation, and boy, you can't walk a block without seeing a Toyota Prius. So obviously Priuses are really popular out in California, whereas in the middle of Minnesota, they might not be as popular. Selling an SUV in Minnesota might be easier than in California. So it depends on where you're selling your car. It depends on how many miles are on your car. It used to be that if a car was like 100,000 miles, people would say, oh, my gosh, that's red flags and it's terrible. But these days cars can go, you know, 200,000 or 300,000 miles. So 100,000 miles might not be as bad as you think it is. And, you know, like I said before, it really depends on the condition. Is the car been well kept? Do you have lots of receipts to show oil changes? Mm-hmm. If the car has had a timing belt, have you proof that was done? So the more receipts that you have to prove to the buyer, potential buyer, that you've been taking care of it, the better.
You know, my car, it takes a while to turn over sometimes, but once the car's warm, then that's not a problem. If I were to sell you the car, I'd pull up and you'd say, well, let me drive it. And I'd say, okay, here's the keys. And you start it up and it'd start right up. But the next day when you went to start it, you'd hit the button and it would go, it would work for a while and you'd say something's wrong there. I think something's wrong there, but I'm not exactly sure what it is. And it's nothing I felt compelled to get fixed. Now, when I go to sell you that car, what's the ethic or the law on my having to share with you that information?
Well, you know, it's really buyer beware. I mean, it depends on how well you sleep at night. I mean, That's a tough question. I mean, from an ethical standpoint, I think you should disclose absolutely everything that's wrong with the car. Will you scare away from buyers? You might. I think you should. I'm sure that a lot of people will not. Whereas if you buy a used car and you're going to a major retailer, you're going to a big car dealership that has an enormous lot, you might have some recourse as opposed to a private sale.
Yeah.
If I buy the car from you, you're certainly under no obligation to help me fix it. You're like, dude, I gave you the car, you gave me the check, we're done. Don't bother me anymore. But the car dealer, you know, they have a social reputation. They have something to withhold, and they might say, okay, listen, bring it in. Let's see what we can do for you. If you go through a retailer, a major retailer, you might also get a bit of a warranty as opposed to, the private sale. Obviously, you're not going to be offering any kind of a warranty.
Are there some makes and models that retain their value better than others on the used car market?
I think, when you put it in kind of a Consumer Reports perspective, and we do a lot of work studying automotive reliability, and the models that tend to be most reliable as new cars, no surprise, yeah, tend to be most reliable as used cars. So, Hondas, Toyotas, Subarus, Mazdas, those are cars that are usually at the top of our reliability ratings, and so those cars will probably tend to bring in,
sure,
a higher premium. But here's a curveball. One car that does not have good reliability but retains its value like crazy, a Jeep Wrangler. Why? Because they're so wildly popular.
Huh. I thought you were going to say Corvette too, but I get the point. What about Craigslist and online versus newspaper versus, I don't know, would you have any suggestions or advice along those various means of selling the car per se?
I think anytime you use these kind of classified outlets, it can be a real crapshoot. I mean, you don't know what kind of, if you're advertising your car. I mean, you said before, why don't you meet in a big public place where there's lots of people surrounding you? You want to have your own personal security in mind. You might not want to have somebody come to your house. And that's another reason why some people go to CarMax or they go to a big car dealer, because they might feel safe about that. I mean, there's risk involved in anything. Whenever you're buying a used car, and certainly if you're like me and you like classic cars, you're hoping to find that they call it a barn find. You're hoping to find that 1965 Mustang that really has been driven by a little old lady only to church every Sunday. So you're hoping to find kind of that needle in a haystack. You're hoping to find a rare car that you covet, and maybe the current owner doesn't even know it's a valuable or a rare car. But those are few and far between. And obviously, I think, starting off this radio interview, you're probably not thinking about classic cars. You're thinking about day-to-day cars.
One last thing. I'm going to visit with you again another day, but you haven't driven the Tesla, have you?
Oh, sure. Driven all of them except the brand new one, which I don't think many people have driven. But yeah, driven the Tesla Model S and the Model X. And oh, sure. Everybody wants to talk about Tesla.
Yeah, well, I was wondering if you drove the 3 yet, but not yet, huh?
No, not yet. That just went into production, I believe, like last Friday or something like that. I mean, from a technical standpoint, the company is very impressive. From a financial standpoint, I think they're kind of dubious. They don't really make a lot of money, if any, on the cars that they sell. And certainly, this is not an investment show, or at least I hope I'm not going to be asked to be quoting investments. But just looking at how the cars perform on the road, they're most impressive, but they are very expensive.
Yeah, no kidding. I thought they were rolling out in July. I thought that we were going to be able to buy those things this month.
Well, they promised production on last Friday, and I believe that they kicked off production. But when those cars are going to actually be in people's hands, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll talk again. Hey, listen, thanks for your help and thoughts on this. We'll visit down the road. Mike Quincy, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.